Kirby awoke and sat up in bed, the dream so real he was sweating from the closed-in heat of the tavern, and he could still taste the bitter whiskey and the smell of death on his tongue.
So, I was once called Buck West, and there was a reward on my head of $30,000. I must have been some bad hombre to warrant that kind of reward money on my head.
Kirby walked into the kitchen, dipped some water out of the pail on the counter, and put it and a handful of coffee grounds in the pot. He stoked the embers in the stove, added a few sticks of wood, and put the pot on the stove to boil. Nate walked into the room, buttoning his shirt.
Morning, Kirby.
Morning, Nate.
Coffee about ready?
I reckon so.
You sleep good?
I had another dream about my past.
Oh?
Yeah. At one time, I went by the name Buck West. Had wanted posters out on me.
Hell, Kirby, plenty of men in this part of the country had paper out on them before. That don't mean nothing.
Kirby smiled. The more he was around Nate, the more he liked the man. They had become good friends in the few days Kirby had been staying with him. Somehow, Kirby knew he was used to riding alone. But he thought if he ever had a partner, he would hope it would be a man like Nate. He was a good cowboy, handled steers like he was born to it. But more importantly, he was a good man, clear to the bone.
If you like doing some work today, I got some beeves need moving from one pasture to another before the next storm comes through.
Sure, only I require my wages in advance.
Nate raised his eyebrows.
You got to feed me some bacon and eggs before we round up any cattle. A man can't work on an empty stomach.
Tell you what, I'll cook if you go down to the stream in front of the house and fill up that pail of water.
You're not much of a friend, sending a fellow out into the cold this early in the morning.
Just be glad we don't have no cows to milk or chickens to feed.
Robert Tillsdale, Frank Canton, Major Walcott, and Tom Smith were sitting at the kitchen table of Tillsdale's ranch, eating supper and making plans for the attack on Buffalo. They intended to storm the town, kill the sheriff and his deputies, and take over the militia arms stored in the courthouse there. Once they had control of the town, they could proceed to move on to the neighboring Converse and Natrona counties, eliminating those on their dead list as they went. Canton knew a standing order to militia units to answer only headquarters orders for assistance and not county officials' calls for help effectively isolated Sheriff Red Angus and his deputies in Buffalo. Suddenly, the door burst open, and a man rushed into the room, his shoulders still covered with ice and snow from his evening ride.
Mr. Tillsdale, I got some news.
Who is this man, and what does he mean by interrupting our supper?
Calm down, Walcott. He's one of my range foremen. Go on, Johnny. What's your news?
I got word there's a band of rustlers holed up at the KC Ranch, running cattle on the ranges there. Some of the boys and me want to head over there and kill them.
I don't think that'd be wise. Time is short, and we need to get on over to Buffalo and secure the town before they find out we're coming.
Hell, Canton. With the number of men at our disposal, it'd only take a couple of hours to rid the country of some of these rustling scum.
Canton eyed Tom Smith, who could usually be counted on to agree with him against Walcott.
What do you think, Tom? I'm worried that the longer we delay getting to Buffalo, the more chance someone there is going to find out about us coming, and I don't relish giving up the element of surprise.
Well, like the man says, Frank, we got over 50 hands, so it shouldn't take overly long to accomplish the deed. And it means that many less thieves we're going to have to kill later.
Just how far is it to the KC Ranch?
It's only 15 miles, about an hour and a half ride's all.
Reluctantly, Canton finally agreed to the assault. He ordered the Texans to saddle up and get ready to ride. By the time the horses were saddled and the wagons made ready for the trip, it was almost midnight. Finally, after what seemed to be an eternity, Canton and Smith, with Walcott and his Wyoming stockman riding along, were ready to leave for the 15-mile trip to the KC Ranch. As Canton stepped into his stirrups and swung up into his saddle, a light snowfall of earlier in the evening turned into a full-fledged winter storm, with driving snow mixed with sleet, temperatures dropping faster than a cowboy's pants in a baldy house. Canton leaned over to speak to Smith.
I'm telling you, Tom, I got a real bad feeling about this little jaunt.
I gotta say, Frank, I'm beginning to agree with you.
Earlier that same evening at the KC Ranch, Kirby and Nate Champion and a cowboy friend of Nate's named Nick Ray were just sitting down to supper.
Yo, the ranch house!
Nate buckled on his belt and holster and pulled a six-shooter out as he went to the door. He looked out of the front window.
Looks like a single man on a horse.
Nick Ray, who like Nate was on the Cheyenne cattleman's death list, pulled his pistol out.
You don't think it's one of those stock detectives of the WSGA been on a prowl for us, do you?
No, this guy looks older than dirt.
Yeah, can't be too careful, Nate. I heard they killed Bobby Banion the other day. Said they caught him rustling cattle. Hell, old Bobby didn't have a 15 head to his name. And they say it was all mavericks from the open range.
I hadn't heard about Bobby. What's that make, 15 or 20 they killed in the last year?
At least that many.
Put that gun away, Nick. This looks like an old mountain man, one of the trappers that live up in the mountains. I don't expect he'll be any trouble.
Nate walked out on the porch, followed by Kirby and Ray, who still had his pistol out but kept it pointed at the ground. Sitting on a raggedy-looking horse was a man who appeared to be in his 70s, at least, wearing dirty buckskins covered with a bearskin coat with a Sharps 52 caliber buffalo rifle across a saddle horn.
Howdy, gents! Appears there's a hell of a storm coming, and I got caught out here on your range without any suitable cover to make camp. I was wondering if I might bunk me and my horse in your barn for the night or till the storm blows over.
Sure thing, mister. Only put the horse in the barn and you can come into the cabin here. We got plenty of room and hot coffee's on the stove.
The stranger grinned, showing a couple of stubs of yellowed teeth and an otherwise empty mouth. He touched the front of his wide-brimmed hat and walked his pony toward the barn. After he joined him in the ranch house, Nate asked the man his name.
Don't rightly recollect my Christian name, been so many years since I used it. But my friends calls me Bear Claw.
What are you doing way out here on the open range?
I've been trapping beaver and such up in the mountains and ran out of tobacco. I was on my way into Buff Moe to buy me a couple of twists of Bull Durham and some Arbuckle's coffee when my old nose smelt the coming storm.
I thought all the mountain men were dead by now.
Well, there'd be fewer of us than there used to be, but there'd still be a few of us old beavers alive and kicking up in the high lonesome.
I had a dream about a couple of mountain men I used to know the other day.
Who might that be, boy?
They were called Preacher and Puma Buck.
The mountain man's eyes widened in surprise. Then he smiled, and his gaze became far away, as though he were remembering old friends.
God, I hadn't heard those names in quite a while.
Did you know them?
Hell, boy. Everybody who lived in the mountains knew Preacher. He was one of the first men to come out here, back when they weren't no other white men for 100 miles.
Is he still alive?
Don't rightly know. He'd have to be over 90 years by now. Of course, he was a tough old bird. Had so many bullets and arrowheads in him, he'd sink like a rock if he ever got in the water, which to my certain knowledge, he never did.
How about Puma Buck?
Old Puma got killed a couple years back, but I heard he took 6 or 7 good men with him before they got him. He was riding with a man Preacher raised from a pup, helping him out in some trouble he was having.
How'd it happen, old-timer?
My mouth's getting kind of dry from all this jawing. Even you got something I might stronger than this coffee and some makings for a cigarette, I'll tell you the tale the way it was told to me.
After Nate poured some whiskey into his coffee and Ray gave him a cigarette, Bear Claw's eyes got a faraway look in him and he started to talk. Bear Claw turned out to be one hell of a storyteller, and he left out not one single detail in his retelling of the last stand of the late great Puma Buck. Kirby, with eyes full of tears, felt himself strangely affected by the story Bear Claw was telling. He noticed the mountain man staring at him, a strange look on his face.
That's some tale, old-timer. Puma Buck had a set of cojones on him, that's for sure.
Bear Claw struggled to his feet and walked to the stove to pour himself another cup of coffee. Kirby stood and went to stand next to him, his cup held out for a refill.
I don't know what's going on, or why you're calling yourself Kirby, big fella, but we need to talk. Private-like.
Do you know who I am?
Bear Claw nodded and winked.
In the morning. It's a mite past this old beaver's bedtime, boys. If you don't mind, I'm gonna lay down in that corner over yonder and give me some shut-eye.
Nate and Nick Ray both stood up.
Me too, Bear Claw. I'll see you gents in the morning.
After the lanterns were extinguished and everyone was bedded down, Kirby lay thinking for a long time about an old mountain man named Puma Buck, whose story had caused an inexplicable ache in his heart. The ride from Casper to the KC Ranch was a living hell for the expeditionary force led by Frank Canton. The temperature had dropped into minus figures, and they were riding straight into the face of a howling north wind mixed with snow and ice. As the men rode, hunched over against the cold and wind, they became coated with ice so thick they could barely move their arms, and their hands froze to the reins. Several times, horses faltered, falling to their knees, exhausted by the continual battle against the elements. Finally, after 4 hours on a trip that was supposed to take only an hour and a half, Canton called a halt. He instructed the men to build several large campfires and try to thaw themselves and their animals out. He knew if he didn't stop and let his men and their horses warm up and eat something, he was going to lose them all. Sitting so close to the large fire that his clothes were steaming, Canton wrapped blue, bloodless hands around a hot tin cup of coffee and enjoyed warmth for the first time in several hours. Trying to keep his teeth from chattering, he glanced at Major Walcott next to him.
So, this little jaunt's gonna be like a walk in the park, huh?
Walcott, sitting with his back ramrod straight, icicles hanging from his handlebar mustache and mutton chop sideburns and whiskers, gave Canton a steely look, then dipped his head and went back to drinking his coffee without answering. Canton leaned toward the man sitting on his other side, Tom Smith.
Tommy, do you think we'll be in any shape for a fight after riding through this storm all night and half freezing to death?
Don't rightly know, Frank. I guess if we don't get in no hurry and give him plenty of time to eat some hot food and drink lots of coffee, he'll be all right. They's all tough men, hard clear to the bone. That's why we picked him, remember?
Canton nodded, but he was still unsure. It all depended on how many rustlers were holed up at the KC Ranch. At the rate they were going, it was going to be dawn before they got there and were ready to fight. So the surprise of a night attack was lost to him due to the weather. He sure didn't relish trying an assault on a well-fortified ranch filled with dangerous criminals, especially if he and his men were outside exposed to the worst winter storm in his memory. After an hour spent filling his men's bellies with hot beans and thick slices of fried fatback bacon and gallons of steaming coffee, Canton figured it was time to move on. They were still at least 2 hours away from the KC Ranch, and he knew if there was any chance of their attack succeeding, they had to be in place around the ranch by dawn. They barely made it, having to stop several times to pull the wagons out of deep snow drifts with ropes tied to saddle horns. Just as the eastern sky began to lighten, they arrived at the cabin. They were in luck, for with the dawn, the storm began to wane as the snow slowed to a trickle. The temperature began to rise to bearable levels. Canton had his men surround the cabin and barn, concealing themselves in a stable, along a creek bed, and in a wooded ravine in back of the house. There were no signs of life in the cabin, and the barn, like most in the high country, was built right next to the house so they couldn't count the horses to see how many men they were facing. Canton settled down for a cold wait to see what the dawn would bring. In the ranch house, the men began to stir. Bearclaw, fully dressed, went to the kitchen to start a fire in the stove and make some coffee as the others pulled on their clothes. He lifted the dipper out of the tin bucket on the counter and noticed there was only a couple of inches of water remaining.
Boys, I'm gonna go up to the creek and get some water for Cafecito.
After 20 minutes went by without Bearclaw's return, Kirby could wait no longer. He was desperate to talk to the old man and find out about his past, maybe even his real name. Out of long habit, without remembering why, Kirby buckled on his two pistols, stuck his bowie knife and the scabbard he wore on his belt in the back, and went to find the mountain man. Kirby struggled through drifts of snow almost to his waist, but he had no trouble following the old man's tracks in the fresh snow. As he entered the wooded area next to the stream running in front of the cabin, two men with drawn pistols slipped from behind trees and eared back the hammers.
Hold it right there, mister.
Kirby's hand hovered near the butt of his gun, but he realized they had the drop on him. He looked behind him and saw Bearclaw, men on each arm, shaking his head. Kirby and Bearclaw were taken deeper into the woods to the leader of the group. The tall man walked up.
I'm Frank Canton. Who are you men?
My name's Bearclaw, if it's any of your business.
And you?
My name's Kirby.
First or last?
I don't rightly know.
Well, where are you from and what are you doing here with this band of rustlers?
I don't know that either.
You don't know much, do you, mister?
I may not know much, but I'm not the one asking damn fool questions.
Canton's hand dropped toward his pistol.
We's just a couple of travelers, took refuge in the cabin from the storm. We don't know nothing about no rustling going on nor about the men in the cabin.
Kirby looked at him, but the old man just gave a tiny shake of his head, warning Kirby not to speak. One of the stockmen who came with Major Walcott spoke up.
He's right, Frank. I lived here all my life and I never seen either of these men before. They gotta be what they say they are. Neither of their names are on our list.
All right, take him out to the stable and tie him up good and tight. It won't be long before someone else comes out to see what happened to him.
About 15 minutes later, Nick Ray walked out the door and stood there, looking around, searching for Bearclaw and Kirby. Nate Champion ran out the front door, six-shooter in hand. As Ray crawled back toward him, mortally wounded, Champion dragged his friend inside. Nate arranged his weapons around the room next to the windows and made piles of ammunition next to each one for quick reloading. After going to each of his windows and firing a couple of shots to keep the attackers back, Nate went to Nick and knelt by his side. The man's blood was leaking from several wounds to form a pool around him on the wooden floor of the cabin. Nate fetched a blanket and pillow from his bed and brought him back to the main room. He gently wrapped the blanket around Nick and put the pillow under his head.
Thanks, partner.
Sure thing, partner. As soon as I take care of these bastards, I'm gonna get you into Buffalo and have Doc take a look at you. He'll fix you right up.
Yeah, don't be blowing smoke on an old pal, Nate. We've been friends too long. I know I'm fixing to ride the long trail.
Nate, unable to answer, just held his friend's shoulder.
Now you get back to your fighting. Try to kill a few of those sons of bitches.
Nate crawled toward the back window, falling flat once and covering his head. Nate put his Winchester to his shoulder and aimed carefully at the tops of trees down near the creek, waiting until he saw a flash of light from a gun firing.
Must have winged one of them. Good. It'll keep the bastards from rushing the cabin for a while.
All morning long, Nate held off the attackers, intending to leave word of what had happened to his friends in Johnson County whenever there was a lull in the fight. He pulled a battered notebook from a drawer in the kitchen. During breaks in the fighting, he scribbled in it with the stub of a pencil, keeping a running account of the siege.
Me and Nick was getting breakfast when the attack took place.
Nate described Bearclaw and Kirby's disappearance, and still early in the day, he wrote,
"Boys, there is bullets coming like hail. They are shooting from the stable and river and back of the house."
2 hours later, Nate looked up from reloading one of his pistols as Nick tried to sit up, throwing the blanket off. Nate scrambled on hands and knees to his side.
"Partner, you gotta be still. You're gonna get those wounds to bleeding again if you keep moving around like this."
"I think it's about time for me to leave, Nate. I'll see you on the other side of the mountain, kid."
Nick became limp in Nate's arms. He gently laid down his friend's body and went back to his notebook.
"Nick is dead. He died about 9 o'clock. I see smoke down at the stable. I think they have fired it. I don't think they intend to let me get away this time."
Nate continued to scrabble around the cabin, sometimes crawling, sometimes running bent over at the waist, firing a few shots from one window, then rushing to another to do the same thing. He had a little hope of hitting anything. The men were too far away for a good shot. He wanted them to know he was goddamn ready for them if they tried a frontal assault. Toward noon, he added to his journal.
Boys, I feel pretty lonesome just now. I wish there was someone here with me so we could watch all sides at once.
Walcott's hammer clicked on an empty chamber, and he backed away from his window in the stable and began to punch out his empties and replace them with fresh cartridges. He ambled over to stand behind Frank Canton, who wasn't shooting at the cabin, but just watching the action.
Canton, why don't you have your men rush the house? Our two prisoners tell us Champion's alone in there. So it ought to be an easy matter to storm the place.
I'll tell you what, Major. Me and the Texicans will give you some covering fire, and you can lead the other stockmen from Cheyenne and rush on the ranch. How's that?
But that's what we're paying the Texicans for.
No, you're paying them to come down here and help you kill your competitors, not to get killed in a foolish attack on one lone gunman who's holed up tighter than a tick on a coonhound. He ain't going nowhere as long as we got him surrounded, so we'll just wait him out for a spell.
Just how long do you intend to wait, Canton?
Until about dark. If we haven't gotten him by then, we'll have the boys fire the cabin.
At about 3 o'clock, Nate noted in his journal,
a man in a buckboard and another on a horse went by the ranch and were fired on. I seen lots of men come out on horses on the other side of the river and take after them.
Nate's last entry was made that evening.
Well, they've just got through shelling the house like hail. Heard them splitting wood. I guess they're going to fire the house tonight. I think I will make a break when night comes, if alive. Goodbye, boys, if I never see you again.
Nate carefully signed the final entry in his journal.
Nathan D. Champion.
Then he put the notebook under the boards of the floor where it wouldn't burn if the house was fired. As the day got later, the burning torches were thrown on the roof.
Time to go home.
Nate kicked out the door and made a run for it. The regulators opened fire. Two bullets took Nate in the chest. Another took him low in the back.
You bastard!
Nate died the same way he had lived, fighting to the end. From behind the stable, Kirby watched his friend cut down, and he struggled against his ropes.
Dirty bastards!
Harsh, son!
Bear Claw's old eyes were damp from watching Nate die with such courage.
We'll get our chance, but now ain't the time. Keep your pie hole shut, and maybe we'll live to get some revenge for your friend.
After the cabin burned itself out, the regulators gathered around Nate's body. Canton nudged him with a boot, making sure he was dead. He turned to Kirby and Bear Claw.
Give these two their guns back and let them get on their way. We're done here.
Kirby strapped on his pistols, having to resist with all his might, an urge to draw and put a window in Canton's skull for what he'd done.
Do you mind if we bury this man?
Why? I thought you said he weren't no friend of yours.
Any man who shares his cabin with me during a storm is a friend. And he deserves a proper burying no matter what else he's done.
Well, I don't care what you do with this carcass. Come on, boys. We got business in Buffalo and we're already a day late because of this outlaw.
As the group of men rode off, Bearclaw pulled a short-handled shovel from one of the packs on his pack horse. Kirby stepped over and took the shovel from him.
Why don't you make us some coffee on the campfire while I dig Nate's grave?
Bearclaw glanced at Nate's body and took his hat off.
You died real good, son. Your daddy'd be right proud of you.
After Bearclaw and Kirby lowered Nate into the frozen ground, covered his body with dirt, and topped the grave with stones to keep scavengers from it, they began the grisly task of searching through the still smoldering ruins of the ranch house for Nick Ray's body. Surprisingly, the fire had burned itself out before doing too much damage to the floor and lower walls. They found Nick under some roof timbers that had fallen in on him. As Kirby walked around to the other side of Ray's body to help carry it outside, his foot fell through some floorboards. When he pulled his boot out of the hole in the floor, Kirby saw Nate's journal lying there. He picked it up and, with a glance at Bearclaw, he began to read it out loud. After he was finished, he turned sad eyes on Bearclaw.
Nate left this so the other ranchers around here would know what happened to him.
The boy was born with lots of hair on him, that's for sure.
As soon as we get Nate buried, I'm going to take this into Buffalo and make sure Nate's friends get a chance to read it.
You think it'll make any difference?
If this notebook doesn't make the other ranchers band together to fight Canton and his men, then they deserve to lose this war.
At the same time Bearclaw and Kirby were burying Nick Ray at the KC Ranch, the two men in the wagon who'd ridden past the ranch were arriving in Buffalo. They had managed to outrun their regulator pursuers. Oscar Jack Flagg, the man driving the wagon that had been fired upon, rushed into Sheriff Red Angus's office in Buffalo.
Sheriff! There's a whole passel of men out at the KC! They got the place surrounded and they're firing on the house!
Isn't the KC where Nate Champion's been living?
Yeah, I believe it is!
Sheriff Angus grabbed his hat off a post on the wall.
Jim, get a couple of other men and ride out to the nearest ranches and tell everyone to come on in here to town. We got a bunch of boys headed our way, and I want us to be ready for them.
As Angus pulled his hat down tight, he looked at Flagg and his partner.
You boys buying into this game?
Goddamn right! Nate Champion was a good old boy, and if Nate killed him, I reckon I'll do my best to see they pay for it.
A few hours later, almost 100 small ranchers from spreads in the surrounding area, along with their hands, were gathered at the hotel dining room in Buffalo. Sheriff Angus and Flatnose Curry were trying to explain to him what Jack Flagg had seen when two men rode into town at a fast clip. Sentries posted outside the hotel told the men where the meeting was. And so it was that Bearclaw and Kirby entered the room. Kirby walked to the front of the crowd. He held up Nate's journal.
I've just come from the KC Ranch, where Frank Canton and a group of over 50 men have killed Nate Champion and Nick Ray.
Kirby handed the notebook to the sheriff.
Why don't you read this to the men, Sheriff? They deserve to know who they're up against, and how one man stood off over 50 for a night and a day.
As Angus read the report of the fight at the KC out loud, many of the men in the room had tears in their eyes, while others' faces turned red with anger at the evil deed. Flatnose Curry walked up to stand next to Sheriff Angus as he finished reading.
Boys, I think we ought to ride out and meet those so-called regulators and kill every one of them murdering sons of bitches. All right, boys, here's what we're gonna do.
With that, Flatnose Curry began to organize the angry mob into a fighting force. Frank Canton pushed his men as hard as he could. He'd made the difficult decision to leave their wagons behind in order to make better time, because he knew if they lost the element of surprise, it would be very difficult for them to take Buffalo under their control. After a hard 2-hour ride, his men were tired, cold, and hungry. Though there was no raging storm to fight this night, the temperature was still in the low teens, and there was plenty of drift snow on the ground to contend with. At 2:00 in the morning, Canton called the vigilantes to a halt at the ranch of one of their Johnson County allies. Walcott rode up beside Canton.
Why are we stopping here, Canton?
The men are dog-tired, cold, and hungry. I plan on letting them get warm for a spell and getting some coffee and hot food into them.
Canton stepped from his horse and went to the ranch house door. A sleepy-looking man with tousled hair smiled when he saw Frank Canton standing on his porch.
Well, howdy, Frank. What in the hell are you doing out here this time of morning?
Frank glanced back over his shoulder at the group of men sitting on horseback behind him.
Me and my regulators are out here after some of those rustlers been killing your stock, Bob. Trouble is, we're cold and hungry, and we got a hell of a fight ahead of us. Do you think you could have your cook fix us up some coffee and biscuits?
Well, hell yeah, Frank. Nothing's too good for you boys, especially if you can get those damn rustlers off my back.
Yeah, there isn't room for all of us in this house, so I'll just take them out to the barn and we'll chow down out there.
It was about an hour and a half later when Canton spoke to his men.
Man up, boys! We still got some riding ahead of us.
As the men began to get their gear together, Jim Dudley walked up to Canton, leading a ragged-looking horse by the reins.
Mr. Canton, I need me another horse. This one's plumb worn out.
Check with Bob's foreman over there and see if there's not one of his horses he can loan you till this is over. Tell him I'll make good on it if anything happens.
The foreman cast a skeptical eye at Dudley, but he took him over to the corral where the ranch's remuda was herded.
None of these animals is big enough for me.
Walcott, getting real tired of the antics of the hayseed from Texas, rode over on his horse.
Cinch up or stay behind.
With a worried look, Dudley saddled the last horse he tried, a weak-kneed ugly bronc, who turned his head and just stared at the man trying to get on his back. The horse immediately tried to buck Dudley off, but he soon found himself unable to move that much weight in much of a hurry. With Dudley trying his best to keep up, Canton moved the regulators out, heading toward Buffalo. To ensure against an ambush, Canton sent two riders ahead to scout the best trails and to warn of anyone who might be ahead. They hadn't ridden very long before the outriders came galloping back to report the presence of a large body of men camped down the road.
Damn, I wonder who the hell's out here in the middle of the night. I don't see how anybody could know we're coming, so they can't be waiting on us.
Walcott saw his chance to get back at Canton for taking his position away from him.
Hell, Frank, you've been leading this group like it was out on a Sunday ride. We spent almost 2 days on Nate Champion. Then every time the men get a little winded, you stop and feed them. I wouldn't be surprised if everyone in Buffalo didn't know we're coming by now.
Walcott glanced at the men behind Canton and saw an old friend, one of the stockmen from Cheyenne, William Irving.
Bill, let's you and me walk up on ahead and see what's going on.
Irving shrugged and climbed down off his horse, following Walcott up the trail, while Canton and the rest of the men stayed behind. Walcott and Irving walked quite a ways ahead, and they were just about to turn around and head back, thinking the outriders had been mistaken.
Damn, there's someone up ahead.
They quietly walked a little farther and peered around the bend from behind some trees. They could make out several campfires and what looked to be over 100 dark shapes standing around drinking coffee and resting their horses.
Come on, Bill. Let's get back and warn the others. Bill, you gotta back me up and get the men to let me take over. Canton is out of his depth here, and he doesn't know the first thing about how to run this outfit.
I agree, Major. I'll talk to the boys from Cheyenne and see if they won't back your play. It's apparent we need someone with military experience if we're going up against that many men.
When they got back to the regulators, Walcott told the men what they had seen.
There's a sizable force up ahead, and it can only be the rustlers and gunfighters, who must know we're on the way. I think it's about time for someone experienced to take over leading this expedition.
Canton, realizing for once the Major was probably right, didn't argue, and Walcott assumed command. Walcott lined the men up and began to drill them in the moonlight, making sure they knew how to follow his commands. He did this for several hours, to the astonishment of Canton and Tom Smith.
Tommy, I can't believe we're out here riding around in the night while there's a force of men ahead we need to be going after.
I got a real bad feeling about you letting the Major take over, Frank. I don't think he knows his ass from his head.
I didn't have no choice, Tom. The boys from Cheyenne are the ones paying for all this, and if they want that idiot to take command, so be it.
Finally, the Major was satisfied he'd whipped his men into shape, and he ordered the men to follow him across the range to the right of the trail, explaining he wanted to try and outflank the men up ahead of him. After riding for another hour, they came to the T.A. Ranch, owned by another rancher friendly to the expedition, located about 14 miles from Buffalo. While the Major took a few men ahead to see if the other group had moved on, Jim Dudley went looking for an easier horse. He convinced the ranch foreman to let him try a big gray that looked fit enough to carry the big man. As Dudley went flying through the air, his rifle slipped from the saddle boot and hit the ground. The errant bullet took Dudley in the knee as he fell. After his wounds were cleaned, the foreman had one of the hands put Dudley in the back of a wagon and sent him to Fort McKinney to see the doctor there. The rest of the vigilantes mounted up and rode after Walcott, intending to join him against whatever force was out there waiting for him. Suddenly, a rider approached him, riding hard, leaning over his saddle horn.
Turn back! Turn back! Everybody in town is aroused. The rustlers are massing from every direction. Get to cover as fast as you can if you value your lives.
Walcott sat in the saddle, his back ramrod straight as he considered the warning. Finally, he turned his horse around.
Come on, boys. Let's retreat back to the TA ranch. We can set up a defensive perimeter there.
What the hell do you mean, retreat?
Yeah, we came here to do a job, so let's do it. I vote we head on into Buffalo and have it out with the rustlers.
The Texans waited patiently to see which view would prevail. They'd been paid to fight, but it didn't matter much to them whether it was at the TA ranch or in Buffalo. The members of the Cheyenne Club were of another mind. They spoke out against going into Buffalo, especially since the townspeople were armed and ready for them. They had no stomach for an adversary who wasn't going to be surprised. Since they were paying the salaries of the fighters, the Cheyenne stockmen had their way, and the regulators retreated back to the TA ranch to wait for an attack by their intended victims. On the way, Walcott rode next to Canton and Smith.
Boys, I'm going to need your support in the upcoming battle. The men need to trust their leaders, and I can't have you two questioning my every move.
Canton looked at Smith and shrugged. He knew the Major was right. It was time to pull together, or they were all liable to be killed.
All right, Major. We'll keep our mouths shut, at least in front of the men.
That's all I ask, boys.
Kirby and Bear Claw sat on their haunches near the fire, talking with Sheriff Red Angus and Nate's friend, Flat-Nosed Curry.
How many men did you say the vigilantes had?
I'd say about 50 or so. Most of them hardened gunfighters with a few ranchers thrown in.
Angus glanced back over his shoulder at the crowd of people around several other fires nearby.
Well, we got over 100 people here, but damned few of them know which end of a gun the bullet comes out of. They're mostly punchers and townsfolk, and not one in 10 have ever fired a pistol in anger or been fired on.
Flat-Nosed Curry, his hands wrapped around a tin cup of coffee to keep warm, nodded.
That may be so, Sheriff, but this is the first time since the war started that the people of Buffalo and the small ranchers have stood together against the big money ranchers. Whatever happens in the upcoming fight, at least we've finally come together. Those bastards from Cheyenne won't be able to ride roughshod over us anymore.
That's true. One of the merchants in town has even thrown open his store and has given away blankets, clothing, and ammunition to anyone who's willing to fight. And the ladies of the town have set up a kitchen and are preparing wagon loads of food for the men at the front.
I just hope the people know what they're getting into. These men y'all are going up against are all gun slicks. This ain't gonna be no cakewalk, that's for sure.
Kirby could stand it no longer. Though he couldn't remember his past life, he knew somehow that he wasn't one to join in and ride with a mob. He felt he needed to be alone, to do things his own way. Nate Champion had been a good friend, even in the short while Kirby had known him. And he planned on wreaking his own brand of vengeance on the men who had shot him down in cold blood. Kirby stood up.
Sheriff, Flat-Nosed, I'm going to take off now. I think I'll ride on ahead and see if I can locate the vigilante force. If I find them, I'll get word back to you and your men as soon as I can.
Bear Claw struggled to his feet.
Kirby, if you don't mind overly much, I'll ride along with you.
Don't suit yourself, Bear Claw.
As they rode through the moonlit night, their breath smoking in the freezing air, Kirby broke the silence.
Bear Claw, back at Nate's cabin. Just before all hell broke loose, you said you had something to tell me. Something about my past.
You told me you dreamed about a mountain man named Preacher, and a kid and his daddy fighting some Injuns with him.
Yes. That was just after I got shot in the head.
Well, more years ago than I care to remember. Preacher and me was holed up during a blizzard one winter, and he got to talking about this pilgrim and his son he'd met.
Did he tell you their names?
Hold your water, son. I'll get to it in good time. Well, seems this pilgrim got himself shot. Before he died, he made Preacher promise to raise his young'un, to look after him till he could fend for himself. Preacher, though by nature a lone wolf, honored his word. Before long came to look on this pup like his own son. After some years in the High Lonesome, teaching this kid everything he knew, the boy met a woman, got married, and even had a son of his own.
You mean
I have a son.
Wasn't too long after that some bad hombres came around whilst the man wasn't home and killed his wife and son after doing terrible things to her.
Kirby, faint memories tugging at his mind, felt his stomach go cold with barely remembered fury.
Well, this man who Preacher had named Smoke buried his kin and then went after the men who done it?
Bearclaw went into a long and detailed story, chronicling Smoke's hunt for the men that had murdered his wife and child. He told Kirby how the man named Smoke Jensen found each of those villains and how he brutally and efficiently sent them to their maker. When Bearclaw was finished, Kirby had a faraway look on his face.
Smoke Jensen.
The name, though unfamiliar, felt easy on his lips. Like old boots that had been worn long enough to become soft and comfortable.
So, you think I'm this man named Smoke?
Can't hardly be two men like that riding around the country. Preacher said this boy grew to be a hand over 6 feet tall. Shoulders broad as an axe handle. Was so fast with a shotgun was plumb scary. I seen you handle that six killer, son. You be Smoke Jensen, all right.
I believe you, Bearclaw. Knowing my name hasn't brought back any of my memories of just who I am.
Could be you won't ever remember what went before, son. Or you could wake up in the morning and all be just like it was. That is a funny thing. Sometimes I can remember things happening 40 years ago like they was just yesterday, and then again I can't remember what I ate for breakfast.
Kirby was about to reply when out of the corner of his eye he glimpsed moonlight reflecting off metal off to his left. He stared off that way for a moment, and he noticed he could make out a force of men riding on the horizon, silhouetted against the night sky. Kirby reached out his hand and grabbed Bearclaw's shoulder, pulling him to a halt.
Look over there. Looks like a bunch of men riding off to the south.
That must be the vigilantes, all right. Appears to be close to 50 men, just like a Nate's ranch.
Kirby pulled his Winchester rifle from its saddle boot and worked the lever. Bearclaw cocked an eyebrow at him.
You ain't meaning to go after them boys by yourself, is ya?
Yes.
Bearclaw shook his head and pulled his Sharps 52 caliber from its saddle boot.
Boy, you gonna get us killed before this is over.
You don't have to join this dance, Bearclaw.
I ain't never ducked a good fight yet, son. And I don't intend to start now at this late age. What's your plan?
There's too many for us to just ride up and start shooting. So I'm gonna ride on ahead and set up an ambush. If we can fire down on them from both sides, knock a few out of their saddles, then ride like hell around them, shooting into the crowd, they'll never know what hit them.
Half an hour later, Walcott and Canton and Smith rode along at the head of the vigilante group they called Regulators. They were in no hurry, and they were discussing how they planned to combat the force of townspeople from Buffalo. The booming sound of a big Sharps firing was unmistakable ahead of them, and Canton knew they were under attack.
Everyone get... God damn! My ear! Look out, man! We're under fire!
The Regulators began to ride in all directions at once, shooting at shadows and sometimes each other, as they couldn't tell who or where their attackers were.
Line up, man! Over here! Make a line! Stand and fight!
Without warning, a man riding bent low over a saddle horn, his reins in his teeth and both hands filled with iron, barreled through the milling, confused group of vigilantes. The stranger weaved his horse through the crowd, guiding the animal with his knees as both hands fired into the Regulators. Then he disappeared back into the woods. Finally, Walcott and Canton were able to get the men to follow him, and they rode hell-bent for leather for the TA ranch, trying their best to get away from whoever was attacking them. The attack had only lasted 5 minutes, but the Regulators had lost at least 10 men. Kirby sat on his horse, reloading his Colts as Bearclaw rode up. The old mountain man glanced at the bodies lying on the frozen ground and the horses milling about without riders.
God almighty, son! I ain't never seen nothing like that since the time I fought some Comanche over on the plains!
You think we got their attention?
Where'd you learn to ride like that, boy?
I don't know. It just seemed like the thing to do at the time.
I expect it was Preacher showed you them moves. He always was more Injun than white man anyhow.
After a few minutes, the men from Buffalo came riding up, having heard the shots. Sheriff Angus and Flat-Nosed Curry rode slowly, looking at the carnage around them. The dead bodies lying sprawled in the bloody snow.
Jesus! Did you two do this by yourselves?
You see anybody else around here, Sheriff?
Who'd you say you were, mister?
Kirby stared at Curry.
I didn't say. But the men we're after rode off in that direction.
Angus nodded.
Looks like they're headed for the TA Ranch.
That figures. Won't be easy to get them out of there. That damn place is set up like a fort.
Angus turned to the side, speaking to a young boy in his teens.
Billy, you ride on into Buffalo and tell everybody we're gonna be out at the TA. They can send us some supplies out that way, because we may be there a spell. Come on, boys. They're up ahead of us. But be careful and watch out for ambushes.
Kirby watched Angus as the lawman turned back around and put the spurs to his horse, leaning over the neck as if he hoped they could catch up to the regulators before they had time to set up in the TA ranch. Kirby kicked his horse into a gallop, following the sheriff. He knew most of the sheriff's riders were cowboys and not professional gunfighters, and he was still uncertain how they'd react when put up against men who made their living with a gun.
Well, hell, I guess it's about time we find out.